This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about miso, and in fact, we are drinking miso soup right now. I had a mouthful, as well as some scallion, when you started this episode.
Good old mouthful of miso, Molly.
Anyway, Matthew, let's go down memory lane.
Okay. I definitely remember miso soup from when I was a kid. I don't think we went to a lot of...
in Japanese restaurants?
Yes.
Sushi restaurants.
I definitely didn't... I didn't go to sushi restaurants as a kid because I was afraid of sushi.
Did you go to Japanese restaurants?
I guess so.
When I was a kid, Japanese restaurants were sushi restaurants, as is the case in so much of North America.
I don't remember. I don't think I had miso soup a lot when I was a kid. And definitely that's like the way I would have had miso as a kid. But I definitely do remember like getting to like drink the soup out of the bowl. I think in fourth grade, we had a field trip, like a class trip to Seattle from Portland. I know we went to a Japanese restaurant on that trip, and I bet there was miso soup there.
And would you have eaten it as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I think I would have loved it.
Yeah. I remember eating it as a kid when we would go to, oh, my God, I'm blanking on the name.
Hunan.
No, the sushi place that we would always go to
in Cassidy Square.
No, near where I was growing up. I think it was just called Tokyo.
Okay.
Or something, Tokyo Sushi.
You grew up near a place called Tokyo.
Maybe
you were in like Kawasaki or.
Anyway, so this was a sushi restaurant in Northwest Oklahoma City, and it was the first place I ever remember even hearing of sushi as a child in a landlocked state.
Yeah.
I remember going there and they had, you know, those little like sort of plastic miso soup bowls.
Yeah.
And they would always have like shreds of seaweed and little tiny cubes of tofu floating in the miso soup. And I just remember being perplexed by why you had to stir it so much and so constantly, because the miso would like, you know, it kind of settles in these
There's
heavy
a name for the type of like solution or colloidal suspension that miso forms in water, like how it I know I've seen Harold McGee use the term. I do mean Harold McGee. I always say John McPhee when I mean Harold McGee and vice versa, but I think I'm correct this time.
I don't think John McPhee would have written about miso soup.
I don't know. He's a very curious person.
He is. But I think of him more in terms of like geography and oranges.
Geography and oranges. Yeah, it's true.
One could be known for far worse things.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Many people are.
Anyway, so yeah, I think I knew of miso only as this thing that like goes in soup or this thing that makes soup. And then I remember buying packets of like miso soup mix.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. I remember that because I bought packets of miso soup mix within the last 2 weeks.
But I remember them not being, you know, you can buy packets of miso soup mix that are basically pre-portioned servings of miso.
Yeah, with like broth ingredients in them also.
Yes. And but what I remember were these packets that were like kind of big. They were maybe like 6x8. Mm-hmm. They were kind of foil pouches. They had the tofu and the seaweed in there, and yeah. I think it was a powder.
Oh yeah, you can definitely also still get miso soup powder, which is not necessarily bad.
No, I don't.
Like I've had ones of those that were quite tasty.
I'm sure the ones that I had were not high quality, mm-hmm. but I remember always keeping them in the cupboard in the year of college that I had an apartment. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, so while I was in college from 97 to 2001. I was at Stanford, so I remember it was very easy to find copies of the San Francisco Chronicle, which had a really good Wednesday food section.
Sure.
And anyway,
they were just scattered, like blowing around campus.
Exactly.
And just got to reach down and pick one up.
Shut up, Matthew. That was my first time ever really getting into like a newspaper's food section.
Oh, yes.
Like looking forward to Wednesdays because I wanted to read the food section. And it was my first time also ever paying attention to like what restaurants were being written about. Like I'd never lived near a place where you would want to read where there's a vibrant restaurant scene.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, there was this restaurant at that time, I don't know if it's still in existence, a high-end restaurant called Hawthorne Lane.
Okay.
In San Francisco.
Sounds fancy.
And it became known for its miso-glazed black cod.
Oh, sure. That was a big popular dish
big
in the
trend.
90s, right?
Well, so, I mean, as far as I remember, and certainly, I was only on the West Coast at the time, I remember Hawthorne Lane's miso-glazed black cod sort of being pointed to as this, like, trendsetter.
Yeah, because there's the miso-glazed black cod, and then there's also the sake lees black cod. Both of those were super popular in the 90s.
I think I was scared of the idea of sake in the 90s. Still a little scared of it now.
We should do a sake episode.
Like, we should.
Good sake is very, very tasty.
I remember having some with you in Tokyo at the eel restaurant we went to mm-hmm. and really enjoying that. But I feel like I don't know how to order it and what I'm looking for.
Okay.
So anyway, but yeah, I remember for my birthday one year, my parents came to town and I asked them to take me because I wanted to try this miso glazed black cod.
Yep.
And there was no way I could afford to go to this restaurant.
Yeah, of course.
And I remember maybe we went there for my 20th birthday dinner or something. And it was fine. It was very sweet.
Yes.
Sweet and rich.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, those were my early notions of miso. And I think that like a lot of at least, white North Americans were learning about miso around that time in the late 90s.
Yeah, for sure.
When it became sort of this trendy culinary ingredient.
Right. And also, but like it had had a moment like decades earlier than that, like with like the natural and macrobiotic foods.
Oh, that's true.
Because like it's always been something that's like a staple at like natural food and health food stores.
That's true because it's a fermented product.
Right.
So it has a lot of the things in it that we, you know, rave about health-wise in fermented products.
Right. And also like is, you know, it has lots of umami ingredient, like umami features,
right.
I guess. And so like is very useful in vegetarian cooking to impart a savory taste.
You know, I grew up with the Moosewood cookbook and Molly Katzen's, one of her early books, The Enchanted Broccoli Forest, that whole era. She must have done a lot with miso in the
Probably.
70s and 80s. Yeah. So, Matthew, what's your memory? Oh, you did your memory lane.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Drinking miso soup from a bowl as a kid somewhere at some time.
So I did the episode research.
You did the episode. That was our miso episode. Molly did it already.
God.
I wasn't even invited. Thanks a lot.
So when I do research for our episodes, I tend to write like a mini thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I get way in detail on things that probably I don't need to get into detail
on.
Oh,
no, this is going to be great.
So anyway, okay. So Matthew, what I'm saying here is feel free to chime in if I'm getting something wrong or if I am leaving out something interesting.
Have you ever known me to not feel free to chime in?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Okay. So most of what I learned is from Wikipedia.
Okay.
Be that as it may. So as mentioned, miso is a fermented product. It's a Japanese seasoning made from fermented soybeans. And it's fermented for anywhere from 5 days to several years.
That's a big range.
Right? And it's made with, so it's, you know, soybeans with salt and this thing called koji. which is a type of fungus. It's a starter culture, basically. It's made by introducing a certain type of mold. Do you want to pronounce this?
I like when the word introducing is used that way.
So you introduce this certain type of mold,
Aspergillus oryzae.
You introduce it onto steamed white rice. And I guess that is the first step for creating this starter culture for miso.
Yeah, and that same starter culture is also used for making sake.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, very cool. Miso, of course, sometimes contains other ingredients, like other grains, barley, seaweed, brown rice instead of white rice, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so as I imagine most of us have seen, what results is this thick paste, this thick savory paste that's used for like sauces, spreads, pickling vegetables,
marinating
meats,
fish.
You know what? I didn't realize, and now you just reaffirmed it for me today. So I think because I grew up making miso soup from one of those like powdered packets, I never knew until last night when I was doing this research that miso soup is traditionally with a dashi stock and not with water.
Should we talk about what that is?
Yes. So dashi is a stock made from kombu, a type of seaweed, and bonito.
Yeah. So the most common dashi just means broth in Japanese. And the most common dashi is made with kombu, which is dried kelp, and bonito flakes, which is a smoked dried fish.
Yeah. Very easy to make.
You can also make a kombu dashi with just kombu. You can make like a dashi with dried mushrooms. But
what was this one?
This was bonito and kombu.
Okay. I was surprised. I made dashi for the first time sometime last year. I think I like poached kabocha squash in it or something. And I was stunned by how easy it was to make.
It's very easy to make. Yes.
And it's very quick compared to like, you know, a 4-hour chicken stock.
Yeah, and dashi serves like a very different function in Japanese food than I think chicken stock does in Western food. Now, I mean, there's overlap certainly, but like dashi is usually not salted. You know, it picks up a tiny bit of salt from the seaweed and fish flakes, but it is there really just to contribute an umami backbone and a little bit of the smoky and seaweed flavor.
Okay.
But it's very mildly flavored and just has that like savory pucker to it, kind of.
Oh, cool. Did you like make this dashi yesterday or did you make it this morning?
No, usually dashi is really best when you make it like when you're going to use it.
Okay.
It can sit overnight maybe in the fridge, but it's not ideal.
So did you make it just now?
I made it this like just before you came over.
Okay. Because it only takes like 15 minutes.
Yeah, and usually I buy the dashi mix, which is not bad, but I apparently don't have any on hand, but I did have some fish flakes and kombu, so I made it from scratch.
Nice.
And it took like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so let's talk about the flavor of miso, because I really didn't know anything about this. So obviously we think of miso as being salty.
Which it is.
But its flavor and its aroma all depend on the other ingredients, of course, on the salt content, on the way that it's fermented and how long, and on like what vessel it's fermented in.
Really?
Yes. All these things. Are you acting like you didn't know this?
Well, I didn't know the thing about the vessel. Like,
yes.
It's like if you like ferment it in like an old peanut can, it has like a peanut flavor.
So in different regions, there are different types of vessels, be it wood or ceramic or whatever.
Peanut
cans, yeah. Anyway, okay, this is directly from Wikipedia, but I thought that this was kind of cool. So many reactions occur among the components of miso, primarily the Maillard reaction.
I didn't know that either.
I did not know that. I think of the Maillard reaction as being...
Something involving ducks.
Something involving heat and meat is what I think of. I mean, it has to do with any kind of browning, right?
Well, any kind of browning when there's the presence of protein and carbohydrates,
Would you explain the Maillard reaction?
It's a chemical reaction between a variety of types of protein and a variety of types of carbohydrate that produce lots of different products that what they have in common tends to be that they are brown in color and have a complex flavor, much more complex flavor than the thing you started with.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like you can really taste the importance of the Maillard reaction when you taste, for instance, boiled beef compared to like a nicely seared steak.
Yeah. Or like a steamed bun versus a baked bread.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Many reactions occur among the components of miso, primarily the Maillard reaction, a non-enzymatic reaction of an amino group with a reducing sugar, so okay, protein with a carbohydrate. The volatile compounds produced from this reaction give miso its characteristic flavor and aroma. Depending on the microorganism in combination with the variety of soybean or grain used.
Soybean or cereal used. So I imagine someone like dumping in some Frosted Flakes.
That was straight from the box. Wikipedia used the word cereal. I prefer the word grain.
Fine.
Many classes of flavor compounds are produced that give rise to the different types of miso. And then this description goes on. Proteolysis of soybean protein, so the breaking down of soy proteins, okay, right, produces constituent amino acids that impart an umami taste and enhance the relatively dull taste of the soybean itself. The umami effect of MSG itself is one-dimensional. However, the umami taste of miso is multidimensional because of all the different amino acids and fermentation products present.
Right. So you got your glutamic acid and your... At one point, I knew the names of the other umami acids.
Yeah. Anyway, but I thought that was really interesting because, yeah, I think you think of soybeans as having this kind of very mild flavor.
Yeah.
But then miso, of course, has like all this stuff going on with it.
Well, that's what fermentation is all about. Like, aside from like the preservative aspect, it's like breaking stuff down into things that have more and more varied flavors than the thing you started with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're like layering the dashi flavors on top of that. So it's like all Japanese food is pretty much like layering umami. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. What's also interesting to me is that the origin of miso is not totally clear, and that different types of grain and fish misos, and this is Wikipedia's
in the sense of fermented pastes.
Yeah, yeah. That different types of grain and fish fermented pastes have been made in Japan like since the Neolithic era. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as much as 14,000 years ago. These are called Jomon miso.
Jomon, the Jomon period is the word for the Neolithic period in Japanese history.
Oh, okay. Great. I'm glad somebody here knows.
That is the extent of what I know about Japanese history. Okay. Between then and like then I can pick up some stuff like starting like the 1850s. Anything in between there, nope.
Okay, all right. Well, stay tuned because you're going to get to pipe up again in a second.
Okay.
Anyway, so these early fermented fish and grain pastes are similar to other like early fish and soy-based sauces, like maybe presumably like, you know, fish sauce in Thailand, right, or, you know, a variety of these fish-based like fermented strongly flavored umami-y sauces.
Sure.
So anyway, another miso predecessor was called shi and originated in China.
Mm-hmm.
Because miso is really high in protein and has a lot of vitamins and minerals, it was apparently very important as like a nutritional thing in feudal Japan. Makes sense. So Matthew, here, we're gonna do a little bit more Wikipedia, straight from Wikipedia history, because
okay,
I think this is interesting. All right. So in the Kamakura period, which was 1192 to 1333.
Okay. I remember it well.
A common meal was made up of a bowl of rice, some dried fish, a serving of miso, and a fresh vegetable. Would the miso have been eaten straight?
Well, I think it would have been kind of mushed into the rice as you eat it.
Oh, have you ever done that? Just taken straight miso and mixed it into rice?
No. I think that would be really strong with miso as it's made today.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the miso you're talking about is like kind of more rustic and less concentrated, would be my guess.
I think we're going to get there in a second. So until the Muromachi period, which is 1337 to 1573, you'll notice there's a 3-year gap between those periods. It must have just been utter chaos.
No, it was like everyone was gathered like, what are we going to call the new period? And like, it took a while.
Yeah, they
like,
had a bunch
committees.
Of conferences.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. It was really intense. Anyway, until the Muromachi period, miso was made without grinding the soybeans, somewhat like natto.
Do you know the period we're in now?
It's the one after the Edo period.
No, there have been many since the Edo period. This is the Reiwa era.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyway, in the Muromachi era.
I don't know if an era is the same as a period.
Buddhist monks discovered that soybeans could be ground into a paste, which, of course, you know, like really changed things. So in medieval times, the word, I'm going to let you say this.
Temai miso.
Meaning homemade miso appeared. Miso production is apparently pretty simple. So there were a lot of homemade versions in Japan during that time. It's used as like military provisions for...
Like as artillery? Like ammunition?
Yeah. If you let it dry out, it becomes really hard.
Okay.
And you can fire it from, you know, well, depending on the size, cannons or guns.
What's that word that means military stuff and sounds like another word? Oh, this is going to drive me crazy. Oh, man. So it sounds something like personnel, but it means like military stuff.
I'm going to let you figure that out. Anyway, during the Edo period, so 1603 to 1868, miso was called hishio and kuki, and various types of miso that fit within each local climate and culture emerged through Japan. So you got miso with terroir.
And also, like, there was a popular character during that period who was like a monster that really loved miso and would say kooky.
Was he blue and furry?
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on MasterClass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, MasterClass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best. Mm-hmm. You go to MasterClass. You can, learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on MasterClass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to MasterClass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
So despite the fact that apparently, according to Wikipedia, making miso is a pretty simple process, today it's mostly industrially made.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like that, right?
Well, totally.
I mean, baking bread is not very complicated, but most people don't do it at home.
But I wonder if this also is why it is much stronger now. Like, I just wonder if there's something about the industrial processing that...
Well, I think here's an absolute wild guess, which is that when you produce an industrial miso, you want it to have shelf stability, and so it needs to be pretty salty and not very wet in order to last a while on the shelf, and so that means it's going to be stronger than something you would make at home and eat over the course of a few days or weeks.
Okay. And these industrial misos, which is, you know, what most of us get, often have calcium added to them, I guess, as part of the process. And sometimes like soup stocks added. Yeah.
So you can like make soup from it directly without having to do dashi separately.
And then increasingly people are playing around with non-soybean misos.
Like did you know?
Chickpea miso, quinoa miso.
You know the restaurant Kamo Negi in Seattle, owned by Mutsuko Soma? She makes miso from, this is not a joke, fermented cheddar jalapeno bagels.
I bet that's incredible.
Yeah, doesn't it sound great?
Yes. That's amazing.
Yeah. There's something we glossed over here, which is that did you know that I keep saying did you know? I don't want that to be like the sound of my voice.
Do you know where you're going to?
Do you all like the places you'll go?
That life is showing you. My parents listened to that Diana Ross album through my entire childhood.
Okay. Soy sauce originated as runoff from making miso.
This makes sense.
So, like, you've got your soybean. I mean, I guess it's not curds.
Well, I mean,
because you didn't curdle it, but like, you know, you're pressing stuff into like
cake.
A cake of paste, and stuff is going to run off, and of course that stuff is going to have lots of umami flavor compounds and stuff too.
I mean, this makes me think about the way that fish sauce is made.
Yeah.
So you've got all these anchovies, all this salt. They're
I've
in
got
this
all
barrel.
These anchovies. What do
that,
I do
you
with
know,
them?
You're pressing them down, and what runs off is fish sauce. I wonder what they do with the anchovy itself, like the pressed down solids.
I don't know. Anyone with anchovy pressing experience, please get in touch. Contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com or facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. Mm, what do you do?
Yeah. Okay, anyway.
What do you do?
So miso is usually classified by a number of different
factors.
Like
it's secret?
So miso is classified by grain type, color, taste, and sometimes region of origin.
Mm-hmm.
We probably don't get a lot of those regional ones in the States, do we?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Like if you go to a Japanese supermarket, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Like not as many as you would find in Japan, but you can certainly find like a Kyoto miso and like a Nagoya miso and so
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the most common one, most widely produced, the most common ones that we see are white and red.
Yes.
Most widely produced one is white, which mm-hmm. is also shiro miso, right? That's
yep.
what it's called. And then there's also one that's like mixed miso. Have
yep.
you ever had that one or seen it?
Yes. And have also like just mixed red and white misos at home for making soup. Like this is a really common thing that Japanese home cooks do. Like they'll have like three different kinds of miso in their fridge. And like when they're making miso soup, just kind of take a spoonful of each of them because mm-hmm. I guess it's, you know, it sort of feels like you're doing a little more cooking than if you were just using one
mm-hmm.
and get a little more flavor diversity.
Well, and white miso, like, generally has a flavor profile that is sweet. And in terms of umami flavor, it's on the lighter, softer
yes.
end.
So
it has, from what I understand, it has gone through less of a Maillard reaction than red miso.
That makes sense. And it also has more rice and less soybean.
Okay.
In it.
And am I correct that both, like red and white misos that we usually encounter are rice-based?
Typically both of them have rice, are made with rice, but like a different amount of rice.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So will you talk a little bit more about different miso types? Because this part, like, I really don't know a lot
yeah,
about.
Yeah. So definitely something that I have found that I don't know if this is interesting or not is like, I think white miso is considered like the most approachable, maybe for someone who doesn't have a lot of miso experience. I think actually red miso is probably a better first miso.
Really?
Yeah, because white miso is quite mild. And I think there's like people who have it for the first time, there's a tendency of like, I don't really like get what I'm tasting. Whereas red miso will like hit you with like, this is the flavor of miso.
Which one did you use in this soup?
This is all red.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so I have white miso at home that I bought particularly to make three different recipes that I made all actually last night for mm-hmm. dinner. One was kind of it was a quite American health foodie recipe using miso.
Yeah.
It was delicata squash, potatoes, cubed extra firm tofu, kind of marinated in a mixture of miso, olive oil, and a little bit of Thai red curry paste.
Okay.
And then you roast all those things. You take some of the leftover marinade and you add lemon juice to
mm-hmm.
it. You toss torn kale with the lemon juice. So with this delicious like miso lemon curry dressing.
Yeah.
And then you toss all of it together.
That sounds good. It also sounds to me like the miso could easily
get
lost.
Oh my God, the miso was totally lost. It was delicious and the miso was totally lost. The other thing I made, which also was just a dumb use of miso, was a recipe for miso glazed salmon. It's, you know, it's winter. It's not fresh salmon season. All the salmon is previously frozen.
Which can still be good.
Which can still be good, but I often think it has a stronger flavor, which I don't mm-hmm. love. I mean, like usually when I buy salmon, I just cook it very, very simply and don't do a lot of flavorings to it. This time I bought some sake and used a miso glaze recipe that was mirin, sake, a little bit of brown sugar, miso. Miso was the primary ingredient in it. Lime zest. It just tasted kind of sweet and muddy.
Yeah.
And then I made some miso brownies.
Okay. Can I taste one?
Yes. What I should also say, though, is that they are vegan, Matthew. Okay. I did weird shit with miso. You don't even taste the miso in these, do you?
No.
What do you think of this?
I think the middle feels like a little like underdone. But yeah. I think it's supposed to be like that.
I think it is supposed to be like that. What do you?
I think the flavor is pretty good.
What do you think about the texture? I found the texture really weird. Do you know what that texture is?
Are you about to tell me? Or
it's ground up chia seeds mixed with water,
which
skeeves me out. And I know that this is very like narrow minded of me. Everybody's into chia these days.
Is everybody but into
have
chia
you ever
these days?
Ground up chia seeds and mixed them with water because they become like the texture of egg whites. They become very like snappy, like
I'm
elastic.
Glad you told me this after I tasted it.
It's weird, right?
No, I'm not sold, but the flavor is good.
I'm not sold either, but I think that this is a dumb use of miso, and I it just feels gimmicky to me.
So, in Kyoto...
But if I were vegan, I think I'd be super psyched, because it's a very good brownie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very good brownie for one that contains absolutely no animal ingredients.
Sure, I agree. The miso that's associated with Kyoto is called Saikyo miso, and is like a very white miso,
mm-hmm.
And Kyoto cooking is like kind of the land of like mild flavors and like letting the ingredients speak for themselves.
Okay.
And so it's you know, it's made used to make soup, of course. It's used to make the New Year's soup, ozoni, which is like made it's a very light miso soup made with a cake of mochi, and you eat that for New Year's. And it's used for marinades.
That sounds really interesting. Yeah. So the mochi is in the mochi. What am I talking about?
The motion is in the ocean.
The mochi is in a bowl of broth.
Yes.
Oh.
With like vegetables also.
Wow, that's really cool. But it's savory mochi.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. That sounds really interesting texturally.
Mm-hmm.
Like I imagine that it's like nothing else I've ever had.
Absolutely. Yeah. When last year, not this New Year's when I was in Japan, but last year when I was also in Japan on New Year's, we were staying with friends in Fukuoka, and the mom, Emmy Lightning, made two different kinds of ozoni, the like Fukuoka style and Osaka style. Mm-hmm. And the Osaka style is very similar to the Kyoto style, I think. And so mm-hmm. like one was made with white miso and one, I think, without... No, with a different blend of miso. I'm not remembering the details, but it was really cool to get to try both styles of New Year's soup.
Nice. Very cool.
Red miso is popular all over. Mm-hmm. And like so is awase miso, which is like a mix of red and white miso. Hacho miso is, I think, probably the third most popular style. Mm-hmm. And it's a very rich, long fermented, salty miso. I think made with just soybeans, not rice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Aichi Prefecture, which is where Nagoya is. I think it actually originates outside of Nagoya, but like that's like the like center of Honshu Island, like is associated with this really gutsy miso. I have some in my fridge that someone brought me from Japan, and I need to open it and do something with it. It's really good with meat.
How long does miso last once you've opened it?
I'm glad you asked. The answer is a long time. Like certainly it will be fine for a year in the fridge because mm-hmm. it's fermented and has little water and lots of salt.
Mm-hmm.
However, the packaging that you usually get miso in at a supermarket is terrible.
Where it's like a plastic tub, usually has a foil seal over it that you peel off and throw away.
And then a
thin plastic
lid. That will not stay on. And even if it does, it provides like no air tightness.
So what should I do?
So I found lately, you know, like the plastic containers that have like the lid that clicks on by like clicking like around the edge.
It like snaps.
Snapping,
on.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have found like even just at my local supermarket, they sell a size of this that is almost exactly the size of a 1 pound miso container.
Really?
And it's got a great airtight seal. So I bought a few of these for like $3 each. And every time I buy miso, I decant it right into one of those and click the lid on, and it's good for as long as I need it.
Ah, okay. Well, I don't have one of those, but I'm guessing I could just decant my miso into anything else is approximately the right size.
But get one of those clicky clacky things. They're so fun.
I have a bunch of the clicky clacky things. But
you just said you don't have one.
Well, but if I don't have one that's the right size.
Okay. I know what I'm getting for your birthday.
What brand do you like?
Of clicky clacky thing?
No, I mean of miso.
That's a good question. So I will usually buy, I'm not brand loyal, but I like a brand that is imported from Japan and has mostly Japanese on the label. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that actually makes it better. It just makes me feel good about buying it.
Great. Okay.
But there are also, there have been a lot of American brands of miso like made really well coming on the market. And I don't have a particular preference among those, but some of those are very good also.
Okay. And what is the general proportion of miso to dashi when you're making miso soup?
Oh, I usually just kind of do it by feel. That's a good question. I feel like it's going to be like a scant tablespoon per serving. That might be a little high, mm-hmm. Of like per bowl. But like, you know, when you make miso soup, like you push the miso through a strainer usually. And like
you
can, yeah, I'll show you my miso strainer if you ask nicely.
Okay.
And so I usually
sound like a total, like someone who's like just arrived on this planet.
Have you? Like, anyway. How do they do things on your planet? And when I say
soup on my planet, we don't strain it.
So it's real chunky.
I think I've never made miso soup from miso soup.
Do you come from a chunky planet?
You know it.
Yeah. Whatever we do it chunk style.
Okay.
What is the food product that's labeled chunk style? Is it like canned fruit? Because there's something that actually says chunk style on the label, and chunk style is a really fun thing to say.
I'm pretty sure that one of our listeners is going to know this.
Okay.
I mean, there's like chunk light tuna, but that doesn't say chunk style.
It doesn't say chunk style. Okay. Well, later we're going to Google chunk style and see what happens.
Okay.
I think we're going to be happy no matter what. Okay. What was the question? So we will post I bet probably justonecookbook.com has a great basic miso soup recipe, and we'll link to that in the show notes at spilledmilkpodcast.com. But when I make it, like, I will just kind of, you know, put in a tablespoon or two for a couple of servings and then taste and see if it needs a little more. But I can usually tell based on the color of the soup, mm-hmm. like how concentrated it looks. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a real brag.
Yeah,
like,
you're such an asshole.
I just have a feel for that sort of thing.
Oh, God. Okay, wait. When we were in Tokyo, that sounds like a real brag, mm-hmm. too. When we were in Tokyo...
Should we just scrap this episode?
Yeah. When we were in Tokyo, we had this very, like, unexpected and extremely delicious cabbage salad type thing, right?
Oh, this is so good.
Yeah, and so weird. So it came out as like a bowl of like a wedge of cabbage, kind of, you know, you could pull it apart into its leaves. Do you think it was like Taiwanese cabbage or just
I think
green
the basic
cabbage?
Green cabbage that you get in Japan is closer to what we would call a Taiwanese cabbage than like a super dense American green cabbage.
The leaves I think of as being a little thinner than typical, you know, green cabbage in the U.S. Anyway, so this bowl came with a wedge of cabbage in it that you could easily separate into leaves. And then there was like a little crock with this kind of thick, medium brown, kind of lumpy looking paste in it.
So I think that was made with hacho miso, like the really dense, salty kind.
Okay.
That's like really dark red. And then it's for the dip, it's usually mixed with some subset of sugar, mirin, soy sauce, garlic, chili flakes.
And so we spooned up little bits of this like very sticky, thick
chunk style
sauce.
It was chunk style.
Onto our plates. I mean, it was really like almost like the texture of peanut butter, but like a little more elastic.
Yeah. I bet there is a particular region of Japan that this dish is associated with, but I don't know offhand what it is. But that restaurant.
We spooned this dressing or this dip onto our plates, and then we would take, you know, a leaf of cabbage, kind of like roll it up and kind of drag it through this dip and then just eat it. It was so delicious.
Yeah, this is something I need to try making at home.
Please,
hey, I've got that fancy miso in my fridge that I just said I need to open it and do something with. it's cabbage time.
It is cabbage time.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So another thing, we climbed a mountain.
We did. We climbed most of the way up Mount Takao.
Uh-huh. In the sense that we took the chairlift halfway up and then walked like 1,000 additional feet after that.
Maybe.
But on the way, like somewhere between the chairlift and the temple where we ended our hike, there was a stand selling miso glazed dango, which are mochi balls grilled on a stick.
They were so delicious.
Delicious.
Isn't there an emoji for dango?
There is. It's like the like colorful balls on a stick.
Yes. These were more muted in color.
Mm-hmm, but not in flavor.
But so, so delicious and like lacquered in this miso sauce.
Yes.
Sweet, savory. Oh my God, they were so good.
Yes. Great. Next time you're climbing a mountain, like doing a very, very gentle
eat
hike
some
on
dongo.
A mountain. Eat some of those. There is a dish that I was thinking about making today and didn't get to it. That's a miso stewed mackerel. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a really old school, like Japanese lunch counter dish.
So you and I once went out to a little Japanese restaurant on Pike or Pine.
Mm-hmm.
In Seattle. I guess it was on Pike, I think.
Okay.
And we had like a Japanese lunch, and I had broiled miso there. Broiled mackerel,
mm-hmm.
and something else. And do you remember where we were?
Was that...
Where were we?
I don't remember the name of that place, but I know which place you mean.
It was delicious.
It's like close to Broadway, right? We should go back there.
Why don't we go there more often?
That was probably a salt broiled mackerel.
Okay, so not a miso.
This would be like braised in miso for like till the fish starts to kind of fall apart.
Sorry,
yeah, it's still my foot after all these years. and so it's like a really like rich, savory, warming dish.
Oh, that's not what I had.
Yeah. I mean, the salt grilled mackerel is also great,
but it was more like sort of it was not sauced.
Yeah, no, this is like a saucy boy.
Saucy, wow. Okay, well, I would love to come over a different time and you can make it for me.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever made it. I would like to.
You could maybe post a recipe, or we could link to a recipe. Think
we can
Just
try
One
and do
Cookbook
that.
Would have one.
That's possible.
Anyway, so...
Is this just becoming a Just One Cookbook fan cast?
I think it is.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm fine with that.
So, yeah, we've talked about a lot of different uses of miso.
I think
I would be curious to hear from some people who have used miso in maybe a non-vegan brownie.
Okay.
But
I don't know if we can handle the onslaught of emails we're going to get. The non-vegan miso brownie contingent.
But I really liked the idea of like the depth of flavor from miso.
Yes, absolutely.
In with chocolate.
You
I liked that idea,
I
wish I could taste it more.
You know what I put miso in that was really good is mashed potatoes.
Really?
Where, like, again, it doesn't come out tasting like miso, but it just, it, like, gives it, like, a savory backbone, kind of.
Did you use white or red?
I believe I used white miso.
Okay.
For that one.
Cool. Oh, that sounds great.
All right. So you can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com and facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. Like, I also want to know, like, you know, there are all kinds of miso dishes that we did not end up talking about this time.
Tons.
And I would like to hear, like, what do you do with it? And you can find us on Instagram at spilledmilkpodcast. Please rate and review the show wherever you find it. Our producer is Abby Circatella. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
The show that's eating dongo on a stick.
I mean, that's factually true.
It's true.
And all of our closing jokes are, we try and stick to the facts. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Woo. You should be so lucky.
Seriously, we should all be so lucky.
Yep.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.